Good morning, and my name is Brian Coots, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at WKU, it's my pleasure to welcome you this morning as we rededicate the WKU Library's Millennial Exhibit in its new location and recognize the important creative and financial contributions made by Gene and Al Baker and the staff of Shutterbug Photo Studios. We want to especially welcome Al Baker, who is with us today, and members of the extended Baker family. Welcome. And we also want to recognize the appearance of Dean Emeritus Michael Binder and his wife Nancy. Welcome. And I thought we would proceed apace this morning by talking first about the century-old tradition of libraries here at Western, then talk about my colleague Peggy Wright, talk about the project, and then do the rededication. Over the course of its first 100 years, WKU Libraries was served by five visionary leaders, each of whom in their own unique way contributed to the growth and expansion of library services and collections at Western. About our first librarian, Parthenia Weller, little is known. She seems to have served the newly founded institution for only a year and later worked as an apprentice at the Nashville Public Library. Years later, she was living in Asheville, North Carolina, when she visited friends and family in Bullitt County on January 4, 1924. It seems likely that she was a native of Kentucky. There's a Parthenia Street and a Weller Street in Louisville. Large clan of Wellers living in Shepherdsville, Kentucky. So we like to think that she was a Kentucky native. The career of Florence Ragland, who served as the school's second librarian from 1908 to 1922, is far better documented. She listed her experience as 5 months at the library of the Indiana State Normal School and 6 weeks at Simmons College in Boston. And believing books should be easily accessible to college students, she replaced the locked cases with open shelves and introduced the Dewey Decimal Classification System. A meticulous note taker, she recorded the library budget for 1915 as follows: $3,344.85 total library budget, of which $502.33 were spent for books, $201 for periodicals, $67.90 for binding, and $1,350 paid to the librarian. Her two assistants jointly earned $1,223.22. The total number of volumes in the library in 1915 stood at 8,495. She had a great fondness for campus beautification, and with a modern language teacher, Elizabeth Wood started a drive in 1929 to beautify the campus with flower and shrub plantings. When Ms. Ragland joined the English department in 1922, Margie Helm, her assistant for the past 2 years, since 1920, assumed the responsibility of caring for the library and its collection of 10,600 books and 72 periodicals. Margie Helm was a native of Auburn, Kentucky. She was a graduate of Randolph-Macon Women's College and later received her MLS from the University of Chicago in 1933. One of her first duties was to oversee the moving of the collection from a room in Recitation Hall, a 3.5-story wooden building which had been constructed in 1889 at a cost of $561,819 to serve as the Potter College for Young Ladies. When WKU purchased Potter College in 1909 and renamed the building, it served as the campus classroom and library. The new home for the library was to be the Cedar House, which still stands, which had been built by students in 1921 at a cost of $6,000. Here the library languished in a cramped and the poorly heated facility until 1927, sometimes referred to as the gulag years for the library, until the completion of a handsome limestone building, later to be renamed Gordon Wilson Hall. The library building, as it was first designed by famous architect Brenton Davis, was built at a cost of $200,000. It was a 3-story building constructed of Warren County white stone with 10 columns taken from classic Greek architecture. And in 1929, a fountain was added, designed by Henry Wright, with portions donated by Perry Snell. In 1931, also, work began on the Kentucky building, and interior work was still not complete when the building opened for business in 1936. Under Ms. Helm's direction, the library's holding and budget tripled in less than 10 years, and with the introduction of the school's library science department in the 1930s, the library was frequently filled to capacity. By the late 1950s, the library again needed space, and after much thought, the university decided to convert the old gymnasium into a library and to construct a new athletic building, later to be called Diddle Arena, that would include a swimming pool in the basement. Although many were not enthusiastic about the conversion, it did provide twice as much space for 350,000 volumes, was close to classrooms, and above all, was air-conditioned. On December 23, 1964, the, quote, new library in the converted gymnasium renovated at a cost of $1.2 million by architects Arrowsmith and Wilk, opened and was renamed after Ms. Helm, who retired the next year after serving Libraries on the Hill for more than 45 years. She was also one of the founders of the Bowling Green Public Library, now the Warren County Public Library, was president of the Kentucky Library Association, and Helm was once quoted as saying, "I believe in reading as a form of education and the elimination of racial and other prejudices. I'm proud to be a librarian." On Helm's retirement, Sarah Tyler, who had joined the library staff in 1958, became director of the library and focused her interests primarily on preservation of the school's records and created the official WKU University Archives. And change continued, recognizing the need for space and the advantage of new technology. Dr. Henry Harden, Dean of Academic Services, promoted the use of computers in the library, and with the leadership of Vice President Raymond Craven, developed plans for the construction of a 9-story library and graduate center, which opened in 1971. Architect Frank Crane, who worked on many design projects at Western, in his 1994 memoirs, commented that the building was constructed in what used to be a swimming pool. He said it was the most interesting building he'd ever constructed because it was so difficult to orient it with the rest of campus. Quote, "It was at a weird angle and took real creativity to make it work. Controversy arose over the tree that now grows through the hole in the bridge that leads to the 4th floor entrance to Craven's. They wanted to cut it down," Crane said. "I said that was nonsense. We would just build around it." They did, and it survives. Dr. Earl Wassum, the library's next director, promoted much of the move toward automation and the reclassification of books to the Library of Congress system, and this led to the creation of the first online catalogs in the country, which were later used as a prototype by IBM. New technology, the acquisition of state-of-the-art equipment, and innovative accommodations continued under Dean Michael Binder after 1985. The stacks were reorganized from LC classification A to Z, on floors 5 through 9, a centralized reference service was created in Helm, and in 1987, he fostered the creation of the state's first extended campus library service, connected with its first telefax network, and later promoted the establishment of the Kentucky Virtual Library, which today provides access to databases for schools, colleges, and universities. WKU Libraries won a Golden Webby Award in 2000 for its excellence in web design, content, and creativity. Today, WKU Libraries, which now consists of a central library, 3 on-campus branch libraries, 3 off-campus branch libraries, along with a vast network of interconnected social media, from websites to blogs, from Facebook to Pinterest pages, continues to evolve to meet the information needs of succeeding generations. My pleasure to welcome our special projects coordinator, Peggy Wright. Peggy?
I am so happy that you are finally here. It took us years to do this. And I start out with saying, wow, Al, it's great. I just have a hard time saying what a joy to finally have you here. It is truly a joy. And what a great gang you had working at Chutterbug. Having looked all over town for a photographer who understood our plan for an historical exhibit, your crew overwhelmed us with their desire to get it right. And we could not be more pleased. Chutterbug became the most respected photo studio in the city from 1985 to 2005. Our first visit with Chutterbug was in 1999. And can you believe it? Can you believe it? It took us all this time. But first, looking at your life's accomplishment, following your 30 years with the Lord Corporation, you and your treasured partner and wife, Jean, who died last year, founded 6 small businesses: Chutterbug, Bread and Bagel, Cafe on the Alley, Frozen Rose Studio. What the dickens was that? I don't know that. But anyway, I've been to all the others because they're food. Bagels and Bites, and the Parakeet. In fact, when we had the new administration, I took the new wife to Parakeet, and that was our favorite place to go thereafter. In addition, I always remember your Saturdays, where you stayed so long in St. Joe's kitchens to provide food for those who could not get out and get it. I don't know where you got your ideas or your energy, or is it just built into the baker genes? I don't know, but it's wonderful. Everything that you have done, I just can't believe all you've done. Often, beginning a photo of project itself seems daunting, but the minute we walked into Shutterbug, we experienced smooth running, an interest that became personal to your crew, creative, as Marilyn, Tom, John, Frank, Jarbo, and others informed us of an innovative multimedia process used to create murals of photographs depicted in the timeline. I had to get that right because we wanted a timeline. They used the new software to merge the photos and texts into one image. That technology allowed two striking features to the final project. It's kind of fun to look at it. It's really just kind of fun for me anyway. First, the entire project would be printed on one sheet. The completed project was 14 feet long and 4 feet high. It was created on an 8-color inkjet printer and was so long it had to be delivered to the Cravens Library in a horse trailer. And when I got the phone call, I was so upset with myself because I had no camera at hand. You all walk around with your cameras in your pockets these days. I had none. I'm up on the 7th floor and I couldn't get a shot of it. I hope I find an artist sometime who will do that because it was a sight to behold, and I have no picture to prove it. First, the entire project then, being so long, it created... The second thing is that when you get close to it, it looks as if the pictures and the writing and the like are 3D. And it gets kind of fascinating because when we first put it up, the students would walk up and touch it. They were kind of like testing out to see whether or not all of these pictures really were 3D. And it was fun to watch them because then when it wasn't, their expression changed radically. The sepia tone of the exhibit was deliberate because we did want it to symbolize the aging, that it was an older project and now we're off on to a new line. Now, why is this exhibit important? Libraries are the heart of a university. It's where research projects blossom, where students seek and find quiet spaces to study, may approach librarians to receive help, and memories of former faculty and students are far from forgotten once it's up and hanging. Brian and I thought it would be fun, some time back, to determine the number of students who walked these hallowed halls. And the numbers were phenomenal. So we decided, so we gave up on that, and the knowledge that there were over hundreds of thousands, and that says enough. These numbers recall, huge numbers, recall the line from the book of Daniel where he says, those who instruct others unto justice will shine as stars for all eternity. Well, so remembering those students gives us hope. The exhibit was unveiled for the first time on the fourth floor of the building. This building, straight up, fourth floor. With President Gary Ransdell cutting the ribbon on January the 20th, 2000. The Bakers at that time declined recognition then for a number of reasons. With the renovation of the fourth floor of Cravens in the fall of 2012 to create our commons at Cravens, the mural was moved to its present location on the first floor, right outside the door. It seemed appropriate then at this time to rededicate the mural and recognize our benefactors. There is a precious story connected to today's gathering. Our current dean, Connie, had mentioned to my boss, Brian, that it was about time for us to do this because now we have moved. So, what was I going to put on the plaque? So I called my friend Barb Deeb, and she and I had this great conversation. And when we had this conversation, I said, well, we've got to do something now to honor Al. And she said, no. And I said, oh, why? And she came up with this beautiful answer. It has to be Jean and Al, because they are the love affair of the century, and they did everything together. So as we honor Jean and Al, we'd like to recall the words of G.K. Chesterton. He would say, if he were here, that if buildings could talk, the building would say, the attitude of gratitude is the essence of humility, and we are very humbled that Jean and Al Baker went out of their way to preserve what we have built over the last 100 years. Our new Dean of Libraries, Connie Foster, will now make you a little presentation.
Mr. Baker, I don't know you well. I know bread and bagels and shutterbuck. I do know you're a very modest and quiet person. And you don't like a lot of But we're splashing it today. As you go out, there is the mural, which you can see in real time. And it is fascinating. There are so many aspects of it that have refreshed my memory, too. But we want to give you a written copy of the remarks of the history.
Thank you.
And then present you with kind of a duplicate plaque or a miniature plaque, because we know possessions come and go. But this reads to WKU Libraries Millennial Exhibit to commemorate a century of service on the Hill, created by Shutterbug Photographers, with special thanks to Jean and Al Baker. And this, a different version of different size, is on the wall to the right. And we wanted to recognize you again in this way for this magnificent display.
Thank you so much. I'm kind of at a loss. I had a little story I was going to tell, but I think in view of what I've heard here this morning, I'll just say thank you.
Well, we love stories. My boss will not let me talk unless it is written, because I have so many stories. He said, Peggy will never get out of there if you keep it up. So come on over and talk. It's wonderful. But what we really want to do, as all of this happens, is to say, with Bob Hope, thanks, Al, for the memories.
Well, my story starts at roughly in 1974. I was a plant manager at Cambridge Springs, Pennsylvania. And there were dignitaries that would come in to see the plant because it was innovative in some of the technology that was there and so on and so forth. A dignitary might be General Bozo McKee. I know the name sounds funny, but he was Vice Chief of Staff under Kurt LeMay. I mean, he just wasn't anybody. He was on the Lord Board, and it was commonplace for those kind of people to come and visit us. But one day, George Billman, who was our general manager, came in, and he had a group from Bowling Green, Kentucky, with him. Phil Hampton ran the trade school, or if you recall, I don't recall the name of the school, but Bob Brown from the Department of Human Services on Chestnut Street, and Harold Huffman, the head of the Chamber of Commerce, and last but not least, Dr. D. Rowe Downing. Dr. Downing, as you know, was president here at the time. If I remember correctly, he did not like to travel or fly. He was not one to jump in an airplane and just go. So they had to kind of coerce him to get on the Lord's little Cessna 421 and flying up to Erie to, or up to Cambridge to take a look at that plant. And he made an impression on me that has lasted throughout the years. That was about 40 years ago. And we came down, well, I went home that night and I told Gene, I said, Gene, I said, you'll not believe who came to visit us today. And of course she was interested to find out that it was Dr. Downing. And we just let that pass, but I came down here and was received in the most gracious fashion that you could possibly imagine. He was a true gentleman from the word go. He made an impression on me. I'm sure he made an impression on all the members of my family at one time or another. And it has stuck with me. And the university, well, my relationship or our relationship with this university has endured for the last 40 years, thanks to that one man. And that's my little story about me and Western. But it was an honor to have him, and it's an honor certainly to be here today and receive this. I never thought that making a mural would get me this far. Thank you very much.